It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The second quarter is going to be a rough quarter. It's a contraction, pandemic contraction. A lot of hardship on the unemployment claims, a lot of heartbreak there. But these signs, and I think the market is rallying on these signs, Sandra, these signs are showing a lot more glimmers of hope and growth, and the signs seem to be mounting. You know, on the consumer confidence number, just a point, the number was up a bit, which is good. But in 6 months, they have a six-month expectations component, and that's where you see a big takeoff in consumer confidence. And I think folks see that the virus, first of all, is flattening on its way down. They see business opening. They themselves feel like going out and spending. These are all very positive developments that will show up in the data. Perhaps in July or August, the third quarter could be the fastest growing quarter in U.S. history. The whole second half is going to be very strong as we reopen the economy and as Americans come back to recovery. This is a transition to recovery. And as President said, it's a transition to greatness.
Sandy Rios back. That was Larry Kudlow, economic guru who works with President Trump, and that was good news. But lest you think that maybe it's just that he wants things to go well for the president, let me read to you what former Obama White House official, who was Harvard professor Jason Furman. He was a top economist in the Obama administration. He's reporting the same thing, only he's very concerned because he said, "This is my big worry." The chances of the economy going up, 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 it's high, 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 high. And his theory is that the current downturn is closer to those that accompany a natural disaster, such as drop-offs in cases where drop-offs tend to be sharp, but also the recoveries tend to be sharp. He said there could be a very fast rebound as people get back to their jobs and furloughs in. Now, for you and me, that's good news. But for the Republicans, they're worried sick that this is going to help reelect Donald Trump. And so they're actually talking about it, too. He wrote an article in Politico and has been advising, you know, others in the Democratic campaign around Joe Biden. So look for there to be more obstacles to some sort of a recovery, because heaven knows we wouldn't actually want to see people get their jobs back and their businesses saved and people back in school and kids back with their futures and weddings happening and, you know, a future. We really don't want to see that because it might mean that President Donald Trump would be reelected. That's really how desperate they are to harm the nation in order to win power. I don't know how much more graphic you could make it. Very interesting conversation last night with Mike Emanuel, reflecting on some statements by Andrew Cuomo yesterday, with a wrap-up by Steve Moore, who's been on the show many, many times. Steve is also a financial guru. I just want you to hear their exchange. Let's listen.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo took this swipe at the medical experts.
I'm out of that business because we all failed at that business, right? All the early national experts, here's my projection model, here's my projection model. They were all wrong. They were all wrong.
From Salon, former ICU doctor Maria Zilberberg writes, "Don't blame the model, since it's only as good as the information it's fed. Don't let the constant stream of new or differing projections turn you off. It is because different models, A, may be based on different assumptions, and B, are updated to take into account our current, present, and future as they slide into our past." Steve, your thoughts.
Well, look, I'm not going to be quite as charitable as the doctor is about this. I mean, we've made multi-trillion dollar decisions based on very faulty science over the last 6 or 8 weeks. And books will be written about the incredibly bad science that's been applied here. Now, it is true this was a virus we didn't know a lot about, but this lockdown of our economy has done very substantial damage to Americans, millions of Americans, tens of millions have lost their jobs, millions have lost their businesses. And, you know, the thing that I find troubling here is, you know, they keep saying, follow the science. You have to follow the science, and yet the science keeps changing. One day the CD says, you know, you can get coronavirus from touching something on a surface. The next day they say it isn't. One day they say you should wear a mask. The next day, maybe not, it's effective. Now they say it probably is. People are getting very confused here, Mike, and I do think the medical community has some answering to do about why they didn't get this more right in the first place.
Yes, so good words from Steve Moore. He's absolutely right. In fact, the CDC this morning is now switching their position on spreading on surfaces. You know, they said you can't get it on, it doesn't spread on surfaces. And then they said you can get it and you need to cover your food and your takeout and your carry out. And now they're saying that it may be possible to catch corona by spreading on surfaces. I read a report this morning that the CDC prepared a 17-page or a lengthy report on how states could reopen, what their suggestions were. And that the consensus at the White House was, we're not using that. There's no way. Remember Deborah Birx said that she didn't believe half of what came out of the CDC? And so here we are. It's good. It isn't good. You can wear masks. You can't wear masks. And so no wonder people are just behaving in various ways. As a matter of fact, an MSNBC reporter was out in my old neck of the woods, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which is just north of Chicago. It's where a lot of Chicagoans go to hang out. It's a beautiful lake. And they were just opining of the fact that people were not covering their faces when a citizen of Wisconsin went by and pointed out to them, you know what, your cameraman and none of your crew are covered up either. And of course, the NBC reporter was talking about how horrible it was that people were not wearing masks and they were not social distancing. And then the bystander who walks by, the guy from Wisconsin, shouts into the camera, hey, your cameraman's not covered and neither are you guys. You're none of your crew. So, and then the man on camera from MSNBC was just speechless. He didn't know what to say. So people are beginning to, you know, use their common sense and to actually see with their own eyes what is true and what isn't true. I want to give you an idea, some quantifiable things that we're learning. For instance, they keep telling us that the United States has more deaths than any nation in the world, that we lead. It's just out of control. We're the worst. We were hit worse than anyone. They tell us that we're first on the list with 96,046 deaths, and it takes it all the way down to Iran, which has 7,417. The problem is they don't. A basic tenet when you do math and you're trying to understand numbers is that you have to factor in the numbers per capita. You don't just take the hard numbers. The United States is a much bigger country than all of the ones that they're comparing us to. So when you actually do a comparison, in other words, a percentage of how many people have died compared to our population, the United States is 9 out of 10 countries that they're listing. Belgium is first, Switzerland last, the USA next to last, 9. Then when you do this and you say the numbers are skewed because of New York, so if you take downstate New York, where the greatest number of deaths have been recorded, and you separate them out, now this is just play-like, I guess, PJ Media does this, if you play like downstate New York is a country all on its own, and you separate their numbers from the rest of the United States, guess where we are? If New York and downstate is not added, we are the very last. We are the very last. Belgium is first. Ireland is next to the last. And the USA is last. Downstate New York, if it were a country all its own, way at the top. So that's not true. When they say that we have more deaths than any other country, of course, they're trying to hurt the president. But it's not. It's just a totally skewed a telling of it. We have more people. We have 300 million people. And these other countries in Europe that they're comparing us to don't have anything like that. China and Russia, we don't think are giving accurate numbers. And neither is Iran. Does that surprise you? And so it's just, once again, we're being told things that are just not true and not accurate, which I'm going to get to that in a minute because the press is doing their share of that. And I have some comments about that. Also, we're learning there was a report that Florida was not recording their numbers or reporting them accurately. We know now that the Florida Department of Health data manager, Rebecca Jones, she's the one that started those rumors. She said she was let go because she was trying to be honest about the numbers, and now we know in a very long piece by the Daily Caller this morning that, as a matter of fact, Rebecca Jones was fired because she repeatedly overstepped her duties. She gave information to the press. She actually changed the data without any kind of permission. The data that was being delivered her at a very remember that there's been a lot of public bragging on how Florida has done and handling their statistics and managing how Governor DeSantis has managed the time in Florida since COVID has broken out. But then suddenly you have Rebecca Jones, who is the Florida Department of Health data manager, fired now, speaking out saying the numbers have been messed with. It turns out she's the one that was messing with the numbers and leaking it to the press. And there's a lot more to that story, but boy, it's interesting. But that's the truth as we know it this morning. Also then, let's see. This is a breakdown of deaths according to, interestingly, I am not inferring that lives in red states and blue states I'm not inferring value on anybody's lives. It's just that we're seeing now that in Republican states, with a population of, you can say they're red and they're in the center and they don't matter, but they have a population of 103.1 million compared to Democratic states, which have a population of 104.8 million. So there's about a million difference. That's it. In a 100 million. So in red states, we have a total number of deaths, 9,107. In the Democratic blue states, we have a death total of 70,144. So you can say that proportionately, you can see that proportionately the blue states have much more of a problem than the red states do, even proportionately. And then also we know now that the CDC's latest best estimate of COVID, the COVID death rate, is 13 times lower than the initial claim by the World Health Organization. I could go into the details of that, but I just wanted to give you something we could quantify. So much conversation, of course, about hydroxychloroquine. You know, it's terrible. The president said he was taking it. He had suggested that people might want to look into it. Earlier than that, Dr. Fauci, you know, contradicted him. We heard others say that perhaps Dr. Fauci contradicted him because hydroxychloroquine is already on the market. It's been there for decades, and it's a treatment for malaria. It's a drug we know very well. And then suddenly they tell us that, you know, it's a death sentence. You know, I mean, or it's Neil Cavuto, even on Fox, talked about people are going to die if they follow the president's lead. Well, a study just came out done by 6,227. It's a survey of 6,227 physicians in 30 countries. It found they were given 15 options, these doctors, of what they would give or what they prefer in the treatment of people who have COVID-19. And out of 15 options, okay, that's like voting for 15 candidates. Imagine how much percentage 15 candidates would get in a race. And of those 6,227 physicians in 30 countries, 37% of them picked hydroxychloroquine. By the way, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave chloroquine and its next generation derivative hydroxychloroquine emergency use authorization on Monday for treating the novel coronavirus. So, you know, it's just, again, another thing that's been completely skewed. And yet we have Amy Klobuchar, who was interviewed yesterday, reluctantly admitting that her own husband has been on hydroxychloroquine. At the end of her conversation, at the end of it, her comment is, you know, but well, we can't trust the president. You know, he has these crazy ideas, but she's just admitted that her husband, too, was on hydroxychloroquine. I just wanted to point out that it's all political. They've made the drug political. And India, by the way, has expanded the use of hydroxychloroquine to prevent coronavirus. And so those are the facts. Those are the facts. All right. When we return, I'm actually not sure which way I'm going to go. I have so many interesting things to tell you this morning. I think we'll talk about the fact that Twitter is now censoring the President of the United States. Maybe we'll go there. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every day, babies in their mother's wombs are fighting for life. with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
You know, some stories demonstrate the urgent need for God's Word, and I believe that Lilithas is one of them. This is Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. Lalitha was raised as a Hindu in India. She was forced into an arranged marriage at an early age, and her husband was killed tragically in an accident. Penniless and alone, Lalitha was sold into a prostitution ring for 10,000 Indian rupees, no more than 130 U.S. dollars, and lived in utter hopelessness for many years before a former prostitute introduced her to Jesus, the great lover of her soul. Lalitha said, "Peace and hope flooded my heart," and she learned to share Christ and led more than 100 Hindus to Jesus before dying tragically of AIDS. If this story demonstrates the urgent need of God's Word, you can help. Visit sendbiblesnow.org, sendbiblesnow.org, or call Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Democrats and the mainstream media are pushing back after President Trump promised to defend religious liberty and reopen churches. The president said he would override any governor who refuses to let people get back to the church house. Whether or not the president has the constitutional right to do that is up for debate. Many pastors are wondering why liquor stores and abortion clinics are considered essential, but churches are not. California, for example, released new guidelines limiting the number of people who can congregate inside a church house, a maximum of 100 worshipers. Journalists are towing the party line, publishing story after story of how shutting down churches could save lives. If blue state governors are going to temporarily suspend or curtail freedom of religion, they should do the same for freedom of the press. If they're going to shut down the churches, they should also shut down the newsrooms. Let's see what Anderson Cooper says about that. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It's a first, Twitter adding this fact check warning to two of the president's tweets about potential fraud involving mail-in ballots with a link to CNN and Washington Post fact checkers who debunked the president's claims as false. It's a dramatic shift for the social network, intervening directly in President Trump's primary means of communication with his more than 80 million followers. And not surprisingly, the president is lashing out, tweeting, "Twitter is now interfering in the 2020 presidential election. They are saying my statement on mail-in ballots, which will lead to massive corruption and fraud, is incorrect based on fact-checking by fake news CNN and the Amazon Washington Post." He continues, "Twitter is completely stifling free speech, and I, as president, will not allow it to happen." Now, a Twitter spokesman has been telling media outlets that the fact-check label was applied for election integrity in an extension of its new, quote, misleading information policy introduced earlier this month to combat misinformation about the coronavirus. They rarely use it against major political figures, but did so in this case, adding language noting that five states already vote entirely by mail, but the move drawing sharp criticism from Trump's campaign spokesman, Mark Lauder. Listen.
It's not surprising that Silicon Valley is trying to fact-check conservatives, but they don't bother to get the facts. I would ask Twitter and the others to check their own facts before they go check fact-checking the president.
Now, that was Mark Lauder on Fox and Friends First just an hour or so ago. Clearly, this fight is ramping up. It's too early to tell if this marks a shift, a real change in Twitter's treatment of all of the president's tweets. But one thing's for sure, he isn't sitting by. A lot more to come on this.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Actually, this is very, very dangerous. You know, we did a whole show last Friday on media censorship because it's just getting worse. It has accelerated during this coronavirus outbreak. Somehow they have felt, you know, really free to censor, delete, eliminate. There are things that you cannot hear because they've determined it's misinformation. It doesn't agree with them. And this now, to have Twitter fact check the president of the United States on something so basic as the dangers of mail-in voting. Look, it is documented. We've done interviews about it. We'll do more interviews about it in the future, about how hazardous and dangerous mail-in voting is. Part of the reason is because various states have not updated their voting rolls. And so there are lots of dead people, lots of people who have moved. How many times have you moved? Lots of people who've moved several times, they don't live there anymore. And so because the voting registers, for one thing, are so inaccurate, and states have refused to purge them. You remember that there was an election panel, election integrity panel, put in place by the president after the 2016 election. J. Christian Adams, who's a good friend, hosts for me many times, and Hans von Spakovsky, same thing, and others, were on that panel. And the idea was to get cooperation from various states to glean their voter rolls and to just really get a handle on trying to clean up our elections. And of course, the left came after them with a vengeance. And trust me, mail-in voting is one of the sources of the how they harvest and gather and use. They have ballot harvesters who go out and figure out where these ballots go and co-opt them. Or maybe if it goes to someone who is there, they go and sort of help them fill out their ballots. And there is so much fraud. It's just so the president says that. On a tweet, the president of the United States talks about how mail-in ballots will be, he says, anything less than substantially fraudulent. I can tell you that that's true. And now Twitter is saying that's not true. And they link as their reason articles from CNN and Washington Post. Are you kidding me? Okay, so then we find out that Pete Hegseth, you know, last Friday, Katie Hopkins from Great Britain, they took off just a lecture she gave on what was happening in Great Britain after the lockdown. You know, Katie's been on the show several times to talk to us about that. And Twitter decided it wasn't, you know, she could not be on their platform. This is happening all over the world. So Pete Hegseth was tweeting about the shooter at the base just last weekend. And Pete, you know, former military man himself, was on with, I think it was Brian Kilmeade. And I want you to hear the exchange about how that went down. Clip 9.
I simply posted the words of the terrorist who killed 3 Americans in a terrorist attack. Yet I'm violating the Twitter policy on terrorism, and therefore I am banned. Listen, if we live in a country where we can't know why the people who attack us and why they do us, why they did it, why are we here? Why do we have a First Amendment?
Right. Exactly.
And I'm hosting a news program, posting this information. Listen, I don't play the veteran card, Tucker. I really don't. But I served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I guarded these guys at Guantanamo Bay. I know what they want to do to us. And if we can't share that with the American people, their true motivations, hatred for America, hatred for Israel, Guantanamo Bay is a gulag, then we're going to get the false narrative of the PC folks from Silicon Valley every single day of the week. And they've banned me. And if they'll ban me, they'll ban anybody. They've told me if I delete the tweet, then I can go back on the platform. But if I don't, then I'm gone. Of course, I'm not going to delete the tweet. The tweet was simply sharing the manifesto and exposing the motives of this terrorist. And if I don't do that, then I don't get to tweet anymore. And you're so right, Tucker. It's not the people who have a profile. It's the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans who share stuff about radical Islam, which is taboo, who are blocked every single day. I mean, Silicon Valley is in bed with defending, under the guise of defending against Islamophobia, anyone who exposes the things that radical Islam is doing. That's what I ran up against here.
All right, so that was Pete Hegseth, and by the way, he was with Tucker Carlson. So Pete was, Twitter censored him also. This is, I'm just mentioning a couple. It's really, becoming like an epidemic of censorship. YouTube has taken down all kinds of things. They actually said that they would not let anyone post anything that countered the instructions or guidance of the World Health Organization, the corrupt organization that we have withdrawn at least back and forth funding from because of their allegiance and the carrying the water for the Chinese communist government. And so now the YouTube, owned by Google, which is an American-based company, is allowing, or they're not allowing, any counter-narrative to the World Health Organization's narrative. It's just, it's very frightening. Facebook has just appointed this panel, and it's 20, a group of 20, and they are, with the exception of, I think, two. One is a conservative, one's a, you know, sort of a conservative, one is a libertarian, and 18 are avowed leftists from, I think, almost none of them are from the United States. And so, and they're the ones that are going to be deciding, you know, what you can post and what you can't. It's very dangerous. Let me say, in regard to Twitter, we are now, thank you, thanks to Greg Ray and Fox News, has done some examination of the person at Twitter who is charged with enforcing Twitter's rules. And I thought you might want to know something about him. His name is Joel Roth. So here's the deal. Greg writes, Twitter's head of site integrity, Joel Roth, boasts on his LinkedIn that he is in charge of developing and enforcing Twitter's rules. However, Roth's own barrage of anti-Trump, politically charged tweets seemingly calls into question whether he should be creating guidelines for the president and other Twitter users, especially when Twitter is under fire for its alleged left-wing bias. Roth has previously referred to Trump and his team as actual Nazis, mocked Trump supporters by saying, "We fly over those states that voted for a racist tangerine for a reason." Called Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell a personality-free blank. I can't repeat that. Last August, by the way, Twitter suspended Mitch McConnell's Twitter account, which then they pushed back and it was reinstated. But that happened. I remember when it happened. In September, Roth tweeted, "I've never donated to a presidential campaign before, but I just gave $100 to Hillary for America. We can't blank around anymore." So he talked about how Bernie Sanders voters had helped Trump get elected. He said, "I'm almost ready to stop dwelling on how my friends are complicit in the election of Donald Trump." You know, I could go on. I mean, this is just page after page that Greg writes in this, Fox, but I want to... He also he opens up about his personal feelings on his own social media platform. Again, this is Joel Roth, the guy in charge of enforcing Twitter's rules, the guy that probably said that President Trump's comments on mail-in voting were needed to be fact-checked because it just wasn't true. There's no problem with mail-in voting. So Joel Roth, in his you know, expressing his heart on his own social media platform, said, "Every time a cute boy uses an Android phone, I die inside. Every time a cute boy tells me he's a Republican, I die inside." On his personal website, he said he has a PhD in communications from the University of Pennsylvania by studying privacy and safety on gay social networks. That's the guy, along with his team, that's fact-checking the President of the United States. Anyway, there's a lot more to say about that. By the way, we'll post that on our Facebook page because there's several pages here. It's a Twitter executive in charge of effort to fact-check Trump has a history of anti-Trump posts. So keep that in your mind as we watch this thing unfold. Now, speaking of media, Katie McElhaney, who is the new press secretary, of course, got into a real dust-up. I played for you her challenge to the press corps last Friday, where she challenged them to respond, why, basically, in the form of questions, why aren't you asking questions about what happened to Michael Flynn? And she spells it all out beautifully. And she said, you never ask questions about that. You know, all you do is just, she doesn't say what they do. I'll tell you what they do. They just constantly criticize. It's a barrage of gotcha questions. They are not interested in really telling a true story. They have a political bias. So Kaylee was lambasted by Chris Wallace on Fox News. I played it yesterday. And Jonah Goldberg, who called her, I forgot what they called her. Jonah's comments were just a Twitter troll, but worse than that. They called her other things besides that. Grotesque. They said she was grotesque. That's what Jonah said. And Chris pushed back, you know, well, we would never put up with that while I was at the press corps. So Kaylee was asked about that. This is the interview with Brian Kilmeade. Let's listen to it. Clip 7.
Well, the one thing you did say is say that make a comment that people, some of you don't care whether these churches open or not. And some of the press got insulted. In fact, Chris Wallace said on Sunday, quote, let me just say, Sam Donaldson and me in the Reagan White House, we were pretty tough on White House press secretaries. We never had our religious beliefs questioned or lectured to what we ask. I would have been pretty tough if I was there and heard that. Will you question the religious belief of the press?
No, I never question the religious beliefs of the press. Many of our journalists are great men and women of faith and differing faiths, whether it be the Jewish faith, the Christian faith, the Muslim faith. What I was saying was I was asked 11 questions as to why churches would be allowed to reopen. It was a bit peculiar to be asked these 11 questions in a row and for the onus and the focus solely to be on why churches are essential. I've never been asked why a liquor store was essential. So I was merely pointing that out. And to the point about questioning the journalists and asking why they're not asking certain question. I field hundreds of questions a day. Journalists are not above being questioned themselves. Journalism is a great and noble profession, but there's been a dearth of journalists asking the real questions for President Obama, the criminal leak of Michael Flynn's identity, who leaked that identity, the dossier which was used to launch a three-year investigation into this president and spy on his campaign. Why aren't those questions being asked? It's journalistic malpractice not to ask those questions, and I can count on one hand the journalists who are like Maria Bartiromo and Catherine Herridge, but where is the lack of curiosity from the current press corps? There's an extreme lack of curiosity at play.
All right, so Kaylee, she's taking the press on in a big time. I thought Sarah Huckabee Sanders took them on, but Kaylee's taking it to a new level. And Jonah Goldberg, what he actually said was it was indefensible and grotesque. That's what he said about Kaylee, how she's handling these. And Chris Wallace said, I have to say that Kaylee McEnany had told Sam Donaldson and me what questions we should ask. That would not have gone well. That's his comment yesterday on Sunday. And the New York Post wrote an editorial, which I love. I want to read parts of it to you. And they say, to which Americans say, stop whining. Of course, the Trump administration is playing tough with the media because the media has played tough with him before he was even elected. Nearly every question asked in the briefing room is usually in the loaded construction of, as you know, things are terrible and it's your fault. Care to comment? McEnany has decided to hit back. This isn't about the First Amendment. The media in the United States can say whatever the blank it wants, and we, as the New York Post, thank heaven for that every day. But there's nothing in the Constitution that says the press secretary has to be polite about it. You know what the word needs to be? You know what word needs to be retired in the age of Trump? Unprecedented. President John Adams signed a law making it a crime to criticize the government. 20 newspaper editors were imprisoned. Andrew Jackson not only had his own paper, edited by a member of his cabinet, but it got government subsidies. Kaylee McEnany, hurting your feelings is not a constitutional crisis. You buy ink by the barrel, fill the airwaves 24 hours a day, and get millions of clicks on your websites. Victims, get over yourselves. I thought you might like that. I certainly liked it. It's written by the Post editorial board, and we'll put that on our Facebook page, too. Sorry, media, you're not victims, no matter how much abuse, in quotes, you take. All right, boy, when we come back, I would love to share with you a little bit of an article written by Victor Davis Hanson. I'm going to try to get that in. The title is The Doctrine of Media Untruth. It's really powerful, as almost everything Victor Davis Hanson is. But there's much more too, because there's just a lot to tell you today. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In an interview with the Breakfast Club radio show co-host, who happened to be a black man, presumptive Democrat presidential nominee Joe Biden said, "Anyone who has a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black." Spinsters immediately came to Biden's defense, saying he was just joking. But after major backlash, the former vice president apologized for the remark, saying no one should have to vote for any party based on their skin color. Do you believe the former vice president's apology, or do you believe his initial comments flowed from his heart?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
What if one more email or phone call was all it took to tip the scales and change the mind of a television programmer? 1 million moms has done just that over and over again. It's free, it's easy, and takes less than 2 minutes. So join us today at 1millionmoms.com. Your voice might be the one. Will you speak? You can be heard. You can make a difference when you join with 1millionmoms.com.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. There's still time to order the Boy to Man book as a gift for a father to read with his 12-year-old son. Here's an excerpt. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. There are many things in life that make us angry, and some of them should. A real man is angry at the right things for the right reasons. A boy, on the other hand, is angry at the wrong things for the wrong reasons. A real man controls his anger, but anger controls a boy. A word or action done in a flash of anger can destroy something that has taken years to build. It can cost a man friendship, a job, a reputation, a marriage, or a career. The goal is to think before we speak at all times, but especially when we are angry. To read the rest, order your copy today at afastore.net, afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Americans reeling from the effects of the Chinese Communist Party's virus are coming to grips with the myriad threats we face from the perpetrators and how unprepared we are to deal with them. The question occurs, how did this happen? Consider the role played by Joe Biden and his principal surrogate at the moment, Barack Obama, in what is euphemistically called China's rise. On their watch, the CCP secured, for example, the following. Trillions of dollars, thanks to preferential access to our capital markets. The unimpeded opportunity to build fortified islands to control the international waters of the South China Sea. A highly favorable climate deal and expanded latitude to acquire assets and technology in our country, even ones of strategic relevance. In November 2017, Chinese state media equated dictator Xi Jinping and Obama as, quote, veteran cadre, unquote, with good reason. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
With you, I was just talking about Victor Davis Hanson. I can't believe I have to say I've known him for a long time. He's not my bosom buddy, but I have known him a long time. But I've never had him on the show. And that this article makes me realize that's a big mistake. But this article is called The Doctrine of Media Untruth. The Doctrine of Media Untruth. And I'm just going to read actually a couple of paragraphs and that's it. But we will post this because it's worth reading and sharing. He says, as a general rule, with the New York Times, the Washington Post, National Public Radio, Public Broadcasting Services, NBC, CBS, ABC, MSNBC, and CNN begin to parrot a narrative, the truth often is found in simply believing just the opposite. Put another way, the media's truth is a good guide to what is abjectly false. Perhaps we can call the lesson of this valuable service the media's inadvertent ability to convey truth by disguising it with transparent bias and falsehood, the doctrine of media untruth. And then he goes on to expand on that, and then moving, though, to the end in his conclusion, the title of this section is Trump Draws Them Out. The hatred of Donald Trump explains some, but not all, media bias. During the Obama years, a media cohort came of age assuming that the hip, young, educated, urban classes like itself were in permanent ascendance. It did not need to worry about listening to others, venturing beyond coastal corridors, or questioning whether it was really educated or merely branded with mostly mediocre degrees. Being in the media was analogous to being issued a union card or belonging to the late Soviet Party. One was part of an unthinking herd, mouthing platitudes and hoping to get by and ahead that way. When knowledge, wisdom, independent thought, even basic competence were no longer requisites for success, then the media naturally slid into mediocrity, valued youth and looks, rank and partisanship, obeisance to conventions and stereotypes, and mastered networking and obsequiousness instead of valuing independence. Trump's antics simply lured the snails out of their shells and showed the public they were glorified slugs all along. Powerful piece, and we'll put it on our Facebook page. Again, it's a lot longer than that, but it's good. The Doctrine of Media Untruth. Now, I want to turn our attentions to the churches right now. You know, California, they're really struggling. In fact, there's one church that's filed. They've gone all the way to the California Supreme Court. A pastor made an emergency appeal for relief from the executive orders issued by the governor, Gavin Newsom. Lawyers for the South Bay United Pentecostal Church and Bishop Arthur Hodges asked the justices to step in Sunday after a federal appeals court panel rejected a similar emergency application on Friday. Okay, so they wanted to open up. I can't go into all this because I have something else I want to make sure you hear. But let me just say there was a 3-judge panel, and they ruled against this church. Two of them, one was appointed by Clinton, the other by Obama, and a Trump appointee named Daniel Collins totally disagreed with him in an 18-page dissent. But there, the majority of two said, if a court does not temper its doctrinaire logic with a little practical wisdom, it will convert the constitutional Bill of Rights into a suicide pact. So, in other words, if we grant people the First Amendment right to worship and assemble, it is a suicide pact. That's the language that they used. So now it goes to the California Supreme Court, and we'll see what happens there. But we know that there are cases all over the country. We've talked about some of them. But I want to bring your attention to an interaction between Allison Camerota on CNN and Charles Clark III, whose church, I can't recall the name of his church. Maybe Adam can find that for me while we're listening to this. But he's a pastor in California. And Allison had him on to talk about the things that they did. They defied their governor's order. I think this is in New Jersey. They defied their governor's orders and opened up. And so Allison's asking him about that. Let's just listen. Clip 10.
Tell us why you decided to hold service on Sunday against the governor's order.
Yes, we decided that it was time for our church to reopen, and we feel that we have our First Amendment right to open up our church at this time.
Well, let's take a video. I mean, let's take a look at the video of what it looked like in your church. And it looks to me from my vantage point, I mean, I wasn't there, but from this video, that your parishioners are really trying to be responsible. I mean, they're all wearing masks. It looks like they're socially distancing, at least between families. So family members are all together, but I see a lot of distance between different families. Did you wear a mask?
When I was on the platform, I did not wear a mask. But anytime I came off of the platform, I did wear a mask. Let me give you the quick run through. Our people came in and parked where we were socially distanced parked. There was a spot in between each spot. You had a reservation for your seat. You came in. Your family had already had the reservation made. We had numbers on the end of our pews. We went every other pew. Everyone in the auditorium had a mask on. There was a touchless entry. We took temperatures, touchless temperatures at the door. 100.4, no one would have come in. Our bathrooms had been completely sanitized, one person or one family unit at a time. And then after someone left the bathroom, We had cleaners who went in right away. Our auditorium has HEPA filters. Our air is turned over every 3 hours in here. And we have spacers in each pew that mark 6 feet of social distancing between each family unit or each individual. So other than wearing maybe a hazmat suit, I don't know what else we could have done to make it safer on Sunday. We had no choir. I know that's a concern. No choir going on. And other than being on the platform, we had masks on the whole entire time.
All right. So that's pretty extreme, don't you think? I mean, I think that sounds like he's followed the guidelines, don't you? So they social distanced. They put markers on the pews where you could sit. They set every other row. They Uber cleaned their bathroom. They wore masks. They filtered their church. They all these things. They did that so that they could have church. So you'd think that the response would be, wow, this is if all churches can do that, then absolutely open up the doors. This is great. But that's really not the way the left feels about it, because that's really not what they want. And Allison does a good job of explaining how this actually is going to work. Here she is.
It sounds like you are bending over backwards to do all the right things and to, I mean, even things that are beyond what is necessarily officially recommended. And I'm sure that that's helpful. But it is actually your behavior in front of the congregation that could possibly be the riskiest. You know, I'm sure let me just state the case as is stated by the National Academy of Sciences. It's you projecting in front of the congregation. It's your sermon. It's the idea that you would take off the mask for that. And the reason that I say that is because there's research that shows that 1 minute of loud speech, the kind that you would do while you're projecting, produces thousands of droplets that then remain airborne for 12 minutes. And so everybody else, it seems, is doing pretty risk-free or as low-risk behavior as you can. Sure. But yours might be the most dangerous.
We're up on a platform, and we have a distance between us and the first pew that's more than 6 feet. And so I understand what's being said. The whole idea of the mask or not the mask, including back to things Dr. Fauci has said at times, the mask is very controversial. We are wearing them. I being on the platform or people that are back away from the first pew, I don't think that's uncommon, including in press conferences and where the president and others have spoken, that there is a distance between us and the parishioners. And so every time we come off of the platform, we do put our mask on.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem with the projecting. I mean, I'm heartened to hear about the choir, because it's also the singing that gets people sick. Sure. But it's the projecting of the pastor. And there are just a couple of instances, I mean, we can look to see that parishioners do get sick. I'll just call some up for you. In Arkansas, a pastor and his wife infected 35 people doing just that kind of preaching. 3 people then died. In Washington, you know, well, that was a choir, but there was one person who was sick in a choir who, because of singing, then infected 71 people. 2 of them died.
Alice, the reality is, in the spreading of the virus, there are no guarantees. Everyone that I know is trying to be as safe as possible. But this idea that because I'm up on a platform, somehow I'm going to infect a whole entire congregation.
No, it's because you're speaking loudly.
That doesn't make sense. What's that?
It's because you're speaking loudly, not because you're on a platform.
Well, I understand that, but if I were to be on the New Jersey boardwalk today, or if I were to be in the Home Depot today, if I were to be in the grocery store today, and I know I know we're wearing masks in those places, but as soon as you come outside, not everybody has masks on. Here, when I am anywhere close to our people, we're putting on a mask. There's a certain amount of, we are saying that when we're on the platform, that we are not going to be wearing a mask when I'm preaching or when we're singing. Yes. But other than that, and we don't believe the distance between us and the front pew that, you know, again, there's no guarantee of with me wearing that mask or not, that is going to make it perfect being there on the platform.
So that was part of the back and forth between Alyssa Camerota on Fox, CNN, and Charles Clark III from the Solid Rock Baptist Church in New Jersey. Now, he's trying to comply, and they moved heaven and earth. They did extraordinary things to get their church ready. And so what does Allison say? It's your behavior. You took off your mask when you spoke. All those droplets, they're going to be projecting to your people. And remember those churches where a pastor and his wife infected all of these people. Remember that church and choir in Washington where two people died because the choir spread these germs. How dare you? Let me just point out something. Now, Victor Davis Hanson gave us a little insight, and because you listen to me every day, you already have quite a bit of insight on how to think about what's being reported. Have you seen any reports, any of you, about the spread of germs in Walmart? Has anyone died because they shopped at Walmart or Target or, you know, the liquor store or the abortion clinic? Any stories at all about how germs have been spread, that the virus has been spread in spite of whatever precautions? Anybody done any stories about that? Because people are still going there freely and packing the place out pretty much. I know there's some measures. I haven't seen too many, though. Sam's Club, Walmart. I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying. They don't do stories about that. But they made sure, the press, that they found two churches where they could blame behavior of pastors and leaders on the deaths, actual deaths. People died because you went to church, because the choir practiced and sang and spread their droplets. People died. Now, maybe they did. But do you think for a second that that hasn't happened in a Walmart? Or if it happened, why wouldn't it happen in these other stores or the liquor stores? Why wouldn't it happen there? I guess it's just only happening in churches. And so I think one thing I would just say to all of you pastors and also just people, all of you in your churches, as you try to figure out how to navigate this, I think one thing you can say for sure is that you will never be able to please the left. I hope you just know that going in. It will never be enough. It will never be enough. It will never be enough. The goal is not to let you open up and worship freely. The goal is to stop you, to keep you, to discourage you. How much time do you think Pastor Charles Clark spent trying to put that into motion? How much expense do you think the church spent on that? It's all a distraction from the mission of the church. As you know, we talk about that a lot. A lot of times people criticize because they want the church to stay on mission, and I do too. But these are just ways of distracting and draining and hurting. To limit a church to 100 people inside. Oh, you can have church, but only 100 of you. Really? See, I don't know. I do not know what to advise you, pastors or parishioners. I'm not saying anything. I'm trying to give you principles. Just know that if you start to cooperate, it will never be enough. It will never be enough. You know, as I was reading that or listening to it, it made me think very much of what is human nature, that we love rules, especially rules applied to other people. I think of the Pharisees and the way they got crazy about the Sabbath and its rules. You couldn't walk. You couldn't do certain kinds of activities. Law after law after law, you know, added to God's law on the Sabbath to make people miserable. That's why Paul said it was a burden. The law had become a burden, not God's law, but the way they interpreted it. This does seem to be man's nature. And so I'm just saying, don't let that happen, because it will be a burden to all of us. And we are free because it's God-given. God has created man to be free. Our only master is Jesus and God himself. That's it. That's it. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.